Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to the Kitchen Garden Magazine podcast, your fortnightly fix of gardening features, advice and chat. Subscribe and follow us now to never miss an episode.
Stephanie Hafty is an award-winning author, organic no-dig kitchen gardener, homesteader, and has lent her hand to some of the best kitchen gardens in the country. She is an active and extremely popular contributor to all social media platforms, and writes and appears in many popular publications. Always willing to dispense advice and share her in her successes and failures, she is also a well-respected chef who not only grows her own, she cooks her own and has written books on it and contributed to many other books. But anyway, welcome to Who's on the Grapevine. And how have you been in these traveling quite a few months now? It's not just a short amount of time now, it seems to be going on forever, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think it's driving everybody bonkers, isn't it?
I think it is. Quite simply put, what can you do though? I suppose people just don't know. You have one thing someone says, etc., and then something else is put forward. So I think it's just the uncertainty that is probably upsetting most people now.
Yeah, and you can't make any plans. I think that's the strangest thing. And this year was going to be so busy. I had so many things booked. I was speaking at most of the RHS shows, at Gardeners World Live. I was building a show garden. All kinds of things were happening. And suddenly it was all cancelled. And I know this has been similar for so many other people, that you had the year of work booked and it's all gone. So, it's really weird. So I'm tentatively booking for things for next year, and you just got to keep your fingers crossed.
I think you have to hope for the best and plan for the worst. But I know from a few other interviews I've done that it's the lifeblood for a lot of people. As you say, the shows, not just the big shows, but doing the going around all the kind of regional shows and even the garden clubs and things like that is where you can sell a lot of books.
Exactly.
And as you say, it's lifeblood, and then suddenly it just went, gone.
Yeah, all of that was cancelled. I had a really full diary, local gardening groups all across the southwest. Everything cancelled. I'm actually not booking any for next year on the smaller groups, just because I just want to be a little clearer about what's happening. But I am working on doing Zoom presentations. I've done a few already.
Yeah, it seems to be the way forward, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a shame because I like seeing people. And particularly because I work, most of my gardening is on my own, and most obviously as a writer you do that on your own. It's really nice to see another human being. So that has been...
Yes.
Yeah, my neighbours get chatted to a lot here, you know, over the fence. It's like, hello, somebody.
Yeah, but I work on my own. I'm a landscaper and I work on my own. I don't employ people, never have. Well, if I need to, I will. But and as you say, but it's your customers and the people you see out and about, the postman. These are the interactions that get you by, which I think a lot of people have obviously lost out of when the lockdown came. And as you say, and you're quite down there, you're in Somerset, aren't you?
Yeah.
And as you say, I mean, where I live is quite highly populated in Berkshire. But as you say, the further away you get, as you say, this is where people have suddenly just missed that little bit of human interaction, and you don't realise it like a lot of things in life, until you haven't got it.
I know. Going and buying a loaf of bread is like the peak of a social whirl. I spend hours planning my outfit.
And so you should. I used to work in a bakery when I went to college, and so you should for going and getting your splits in. I mean, as you say, I mean, a few other, as you say, a lot of people have been hit. I mean, do you think it's going to come back quite well? Because obviously it basically wiped out the garden industry in that, in some senses. Do you see it? Have you noticed it slowly coming back?
Well, the writing side of things wasn't wiped out. Book sales have been really good. I still write for the same magazines, and their sales have been really good. Yes. So that side of things is great. I think a lot of people got into gardening during lockdown, and yeah, for sure, some, once their work picks up again, they won't have the time or whatever to continue with it, but others will continue. So I think it has encouraged more people to get into growing, even if it's just on their windowsill, which is lovely. And I think the talks will come back for sure if the venues are open. I know even, you know, gardening clubs which have decided to not book at all for themselves next year that have been emailing me about the following year, they're all really keen to start everything again. It's just a question of when, and nobody can know that. So you've just got to keep optimistic, really, as much as can.
No one can tell the future, unfortunately.
No,
this is it. I'd say, I think the secret's going to be this interest in gardening, allotments, etc. Is how you keep hold of these people is going to be. Because as you say, they've had a lot of spare time. And then suddenly when their time gets grabbed by other things, how do you keep their interest? Because
Well, then they need no dig allotments, which are much more time friendly.
Yeah.
They require less time each week. So something like that. I think if they adapt to using methods which are better for people, when, because most my allotment, which is up the road, I've had that I think 16 years, and all of that time I've either been, you know, like three small children, they take up a lot of time, working full time plus being a single mum of three children, then there would have been teens, and or you know, older than babies, and so you're fitting it in evenings and weekends and in between things. So and it's you having like a no dig allotment just saves so much time, and it makes it more achievable. And I've got arthritis as well, so it's not like I'm super fit woman. Sometimes my bones are a bit creaky, so I think it is achievable if you use the right methods, definitely. Yeah.
No, I totally agree. Well, it's a bit like, as you say, managing your allotment, no dig helps, and also trying to do things, what's next, biodiverse, but trying to make things, as you see, grow things that maybe sometimes you have to grow a nasturtium or something to keep one pest away from what you truly want to do.
Actually, nasturtiums is an interesting one, because that's a bit of a myth. People say, I'm going to grow nasturtiums, and that will attract the caterpillars away from my brassicas. And the cabbage white butterfly is not going to go and lay her eggs on your nasturtiums and ignore your Brussels sprouts. That isn't how it works. In fact, I have somewhere on my computer a great photo of a bed, and I was away for a week working. This was last year when I used to be able to go away and work for a week.
Have to go out.
And the netting had blown off my Brussels sprouts while I was away, and I covered it back when I got home. It was butterfly netting. But the cabbage, the butterflies had gotten in and they'd laid her eggs. And next to this bed, there just happened to be nasturtiums. That's where I was growing them. And a month later, all of my Brussels sprouts, which I hadn't noticed, had the eggs, had been stripped down to the bone, and there was barely a nibble on the nasturtiums. So they are good to grow, and if the butterfly lays her eggs on those, then you're providing a food source for the predators of the caterpillar, as well as, obviously, we do need butterflies in the ecosystem, even cabbage whites. So it's part of the system, but it's not it's not, you see these little memes on Facebook and things where it's a picture of nastertiums, plant these and all your worries will go away. It doesn't quite work like that. So biodiversity is really more about that. It's growing a wider range of plants. And one of the best ones for cabbage white butterflies, since you mentioned nastertiums, is having some brassicas that you leave to flower as much as possible year round. And they bring in, so they're a food source for the butterflies. They're also a food source for birds because they can come and eat, and other creatures. And also things like parasitic wasps, social wasps, those kinds of insects which will feed on your bugs. And I know, I've heard of farmers doing this on a farm scale. So they're protecting large feeds. I have to net my brassicas here. If I don't, the pigeons will have them. So I use butterfly netting against caterpillars and pigeons. And butterfly netting has really small holes. So animals, birds do not get tangled up. I make sure it's properly pegged down. And it's not, so it's not going to harm birds or small mammals. It's very important to peg all netting down for that reason. Otherwise, they can get caught up and die.
They find a way in as well.
I keep my flowering ones separate, and I even do it in my polytunnel as much as I can year round. I've got wild rocket flowering in there at the moment. I open the doors in the day, and then you're building up the ecosystem within your garden. And it really makes a huge difference. It's not an overnight miracle worker, but the creatures will come to learn that this is a good place to live. You're going to be creating habitat for other creatures that you don't even notice are there. And it works superbly. So that's the kind of thing I'm very passionate about, because it makes a huge difference for pest control. I barely have to do anything apart from, I say, protect from pigeons. I haven't found a brassica I can grow that scares pigeons off. But so that's it's ecologically sound, and you don't have to use any horrible chemicals, which I wouldn't anyway.
Yeah. And I think in the soil as well, the no dig principles in the soil is there's an awful lot more creatures in the soil that you would never see, even if you've got a microscope on them sometimes. That keeping that balance as well, because actually healthy soil equals healthy plant.
Yeah, it's the key to everything, really. And as we can see globally, where there's depleted soils and it's having a catastrophic impact on all kinds of life. And I think people imagine, when I first got into no-dig gardening, I was thinking about worms. So my children were little then as well, and we used to sing songs about worms. And when you're digging the soil, you think these poor little worms getting all chopped up. Because we're all aware of worms, they're actually quite cute. But actually the main key things in the soil, more than worms, are the microscopic flora and fauna and the fungi, which we've learned more about in recent years, which still is a phenomenal area of research. I don't know very much about it. It's being more and more studied. I mean, the fungal networks that it helps plants with moisture. So it helps keep plants moist if you've got these fungal networks, and it helps them to feed. It helps to protect their root systems against negative soil life that's harmful. And some scientists have seen it's almost like a form of communication, like a communication network between the plants. I'm not sure what they're talking about, but and this is the mycorrhizal and other fungi. And when you're digging, you destroy it. So that's, you dig it over, you are breaking up these fungal networks. And so if you're digging over your allotment for the winter, that's what you're doing. It's not the end of the world. If you then think, oh my goodness, I've broken up my fungal networks, mulch the soil and leave it, and it will repair itself. So it's not catastrophic in that sense. If you're constantly digging, then you're going to be really destroying it. But if you look
you
in
may
the
give
shop,
up in the end as well if you keep doing it.
Yeah,
it'll probably say, what's the point?
Buy mycorrhizae. What is the point? You know, what you need is the mycorrhizae that is naturally occurring in your soil. That will be the best mycorrhizae for where you are. There's no point in buying mycorrhizae, which is probably being imported from Canada, where it's completely different climate, growing conditions, soil. Why? When all you need to do is just not dig. And the soil, it's naturally occurring there.
And it's free.
Everything will be happy.
Yeah, it's free as well. You don't have
it's
to buy
free.
A lot
I like
of things
free,
in.
Yeah.
As you say, I mean, I often say to people all the years I've been doing gardening is you have to do your gardening or your veg growing or anything. You need to suit it to where you are. We'd all love to live in the Swiss Alps and have all these lovely tumbling, but you're not going to get it. You need to work with what you've got.
Exactly.
And make the best of what you have. And sometimes people are always trying to force something that is not going to grow where you may have the wrong soil, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're in a woodland setting where I am, you're not going to get a totally different kind of rolling hills type look. So, and sometimes people over force things and then wonder why ultimately it never really, it's always trying to fight back and revert to what it wants to be.
Yeah, well, I grow on heavy clay.
Do you? Well, I was going to say, I have spoken to Charles Dow. I did speak to Charles. It's very interesting how he's been all over the world growing, and his principle is it still works exactly the same where you are.
Well, Charles hasn't. I would suppose he has a bit. He had
a
garden
bit.
In France.
Yeah, and he said he had a bit in Africa as well, because I was like...
Oh, yeah, he was there for a while when he was younger, yeah.
That's it, but he says the principle is the same. You can use no dig anywhere.
Totally, and we get sent photographs, and here I run quite a big Facebook group, which is international, and so people from all around the world post their photos of their gardens using very similar methods, and it's working all over and in different climates. Sometimes you can tweak things a bit, just to suit where you are, which is exactly how gardening should be. But yes, it works very well all over the place.
Yeah, very good. So you've been had your allotment for 20 years.
16.
What have you, over those years, how did you start off that first 16 years? Have you started off with no dig at the beginning, or have you...
No, I didn't know about it. Actually, I didn't know anything about it. And also, when we got the gardens... The allotments, so it was a brand new site. It had been allotments years and years before, and they'd been allowed to go completely grown over. So the council rotovated, gave us our plots, and they were full of stones, big stones like you build a house out of. And all of us dug the stones out. And all I knew about was digging the soil. And so that's what I did. And It was very, very weedy. And the problem with the rotivating that the council had done is there's couch and bindweed there, and it just made that problem even worse. So I was battling all of that. And I'd heard, after I'd had my allotment for two or three years, I'd heard about this bloke who was doing no dig nearby. And because we're quite near Glastonbury, I just thought it was one of these. Imagine this kind of hippie sitting there just letting things grow, man. And I thought, oh God, that sounds a bit weird. And weirdly enough, like within a year, I ended up working for him.
Oh,
and
right.
I then saw what a no dig garden was like. And I think that was in the summer. And so that winter, I didn't dig my allotment over. I mulched it. And so it's been no dig now for about 12 years.
Very good. Yeah. Well, often, as you say, this funny how these little connections in life happen. And
exactly.
Organically.
Yeah.
And as you say, they just happen and they work well.
And he's not a hippie.
No, I can't see him.
No.
I can't see him being a hippie. No. Doesn't quite fit that genre, shall we say.
No, if he's got
he's a
cat.
He's a lovely guy. He's a lovely. I mean, as you say, for looking after what he's got, you need something that, as he says, he couldn't do that all. If he was digging that all over,
no,
he couldn't do it.
No, the weed burden would be enormous. It would be crazy. And so if you think, I put the allotment, people do all different kinds of things at my allotments. So we just get on. It does, no one's allowed to use chemicals, so that's fab. But whatever style people want, it's entirely up to them. But I notice, I'm surrounded by dairy farms. A lot of people at the allotments get a delivery of well-rotted cow manure every year. And the no-diggers spread it on the surface of their bed. So it takes them half a day and that's it, job done for the whole year. And the diggers spread it on their dirt beds and then spend the winter digging it in. And it's just so much more work. And there is literally no advantage to doing it. And there's lots of disadvantages for doing it. So one thing that people sometimes say is that no dig is really expensive, and that you, because you have to use all this compost. And it's, I think what their misunderstanding is, they see maybe how Charles set up Homemakers, and when that was a brand new garden, it was when it was just the weedy pasture. For sure, I mean, we put 6 inches of compost on the ground, but it was setting up a market garden immediately. So it was worth it. I think Charles put about £450 of the compost down, and in 1 year, that first year, he sold about £16,500 worth of vegetables. So as an investment for a market garden, it was super. And then since then, it's actually, for most of us who are not having market gardens, we're having our own home gardens, you want to put about 2-3 centimetres of compost on a year. If you've got more, that's great, but that's fine. Some years I've done none on my plot, as an experiment, really. I've used comfrey feeds and things like that, things made from the hedgerows, and it worked absolutely fine. So it is a bit of a myth that's flying around, because you use the same amount of compost as you would do if you were a digger, because digging the soil does not make it fertile. You have to be digging something in.
I let the worms do the work. I use raised beds, and I have done for years. When I first went to have my allotment, the old boys, you did the usual, or was it stamp collecting next year, son? And they saw me putting these beds in, and it's a bit of work to fill the beds up. Of course, after that, all I do now, I put a bag of compost on it, a barrel of compost.
Very similar.
And I let the worms do the work. I don't dig it at all. I just think it'll get its way in there.
And the rest of the soil life also incorporates all these microscopic organisms.
That keeps it all good. Oh, brilliant stuff. Right. Now, Steph, we've all got veg that grows, kind of just happens and works for us. What is your veg heaven and veg hell?
My favourite vegetable to grow is aubergines. Okay. It's palaver, because I grow lots of different varieties, and I really like the long thin purple ones and the long thin green ones, and the little round orange stripy ones and the big round white ones. Get the idea. So I maybe grow 15 to 20 different varieties of aubergine a year, and that involves, because it's all from seed, that involves starting it really in February, and grow lights are helpful and heated propagators are a must. So it's quite labour intensive. This is purely for pleasure. You know, obviously I eat it as well, but this is my bliss, are all these different aubergines. I do have a polytunnel.
I was going to say.
And I absolutely love them. I think they're great, and they just make me so happy. And what kind of vegetable hell would you like?
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Is there a plant that literally you everyone has one, a lot of people, is brassicas, that you've always tried and you never quite get, or very rarely get what you actually hope to get?
No, I mean, there's been nothing normal that I've wanted to grow that hasn't been, I mean, brassicas, I think, are quite easy if you get the timing right and you protect them.
Yes.
I think a lot of, unless you're, you know, if you're really unfortunate, you have somewhere with club root, then yeah, absolutely, that's a different thing. And sometimes people get horrible storms and knock over all their Brussels sprouts, which is sad. Or you go away for a week and they get eaten by caterpillars, like happened to me. But the only things I find, yeah, some things that I'm, it's when I'm trying to grow something that is not for our climate. And the one that I keep trying is blue butterfly pea.
All
because
right.
My dad lives in Asia and there they grow like weeds. They scramble all over. And it's a beautiful blue flower, which is a natural, you can make tea from it, a really refreshing herb tea.
Oh,
it's a natural blue dye. So you can dye cakes with it, you can dye rice, you can dye vodka. If you make blue vodka with it, so you've got this amazing blue, and then put some drops of lemon juice in, it goes ultraviolet. It's wonderful. So when I'm visiting Dad, I can bring back bags of the petals, which I've got some to do that with. And I've bought the seeds. Every year I try to grow it, and because we really don't have the climate, and I've tried growing it earlier in the year, and obviously I do it in the polytunnel, and they just get going when our daylight starts to drop. But I am still trying.
Yeah, I could say, because some vegetables and some plants obviously are affected not so much by its actual sunlight hours rather than the heat of the summer that does it.
And well, with blue butterfly pea, it's both. I mean, it's a tropical plant. It doesn't want to be here.
No.
Whereas other things that grow like brilliantly, like lemongrass there, I can grow that fine here. It's even with the frost, it's still growing in the polytunnel. So that's the one, but it is because it's not really wanting to grow here.
No, I can't blame it. That's fair enough. Now, on to another thing. I hear we're talking about your allotment, and do you have an allotment on your garden as well?
Yeah, I grow my back garden's all food too.
But you're going to be leaving it, Steph.
I am, yeah. I've sold my house.
You sold your house, yeah.
Yeah.
Are you going far? Because obviously I know that you're not going to be working at Homemakers anymore.
No. Well, we both, and Charles and I own the business together.
Yeah.
So we're still doing things like the shows and stuff, we're doing that together and that kind of thing. But I'm not going to be doing the courses anymore because I'm going to Wales.
Oh, very nice too. Anywhere else?
Yeah, so I had an offer accepted on a house yesterday.
Oh, excellent. And can you tell us a bit more about what you're, is it going to be, is it a lovely garden with a house attached?
Do you know, I've saw a lot of properties. One of the strange things about the COVID rules at the moment is it's perfectly okay, as long as, you know, you sanitize your hands and wear a mask, to view houses. That's allowed. So you're not allowed to go and have a cup of tea with your friend, but you can go to houses.
So
it was all perfectly legitimate. And I looked at lots of properties. And so I'm moving there. Obviously wanting to grow food, I would like to have everything grown around my garden rather than having to keep going up the road to the allotment. That's my dream. And I needed enough room so my children can visit. They're all young adults, they're all students. And so I looked at all kinds of things, and I was kind of, I could get several acres and this would be fab. And then I thought, actually, when I realistically, I would never be doing anything else with my life.
Nope.
So, which isn't what I want. So it's just under half an acre, which is manageable.
Yeah.
And it's There's not really any vegetables growing there. There's a tiny, tiny veg plot, but there's plenty of scope. And the house, I'm a food writer as well, so the kitchen's important to me. And there's plenty of space for me to do that side of my work as well, and really good Wi-Fi, which is important for my work as well.
Yes, I imagine it would be, yes. One bit of luck I have where I live is we do have very good Wi-Fi, but yes, unfortunately, it's often a bane of many people that their Wi-Fi is awful. But, well, no, I hope it goes well for you, because it's nice that you've got something you can create. And there's many lovely parts of Wales.
Yeah.
As I say. So, as I say, one of my very first interviews I call him my most famous Welshman, which is Terry Walton. And as you say, he's been growing vegetables in the valleys forever, as I say. So, and as you say, it's a lovely place. And as I say, it's nice you can start something, you can create something. I'm sure you'll have your veg garden and kitchen done first. So, best of luck with it. But yeah, no, as you say, because I'm going to be moving. Admittedly, I'm moving counties, but where I live, I can be in three different counties in about 5 minutes. But I had to give up my allotment the other day because I knew I was going to be moving, fingers crossed, to touch wood. Mm. And as you said, that's what I've always wanted. I said to my wife, we need to move somewhere where I don't have to keep, sometimes on a Sunday morning, I don't want to have to go up and think, what do I need? It'd be nice to just walk into my garden and grab some carrots, get a cabbage, all these sort of things. Whereas sometimes you kind of sit there, oh God, go up to the, it's not far to my allotment, but you know what I mean? It'd just be nice to be able to, little things come home off, because I work as a gardener for a living, landscaper. I don't always want to go up my allotment in the evening sometimes. I've had enough of the sun and everything. But whereas if it's right outside, I probably would do that little bit, those little things that you want to do. So, well, best of luck with it. Hopefully it all goes through.
Yeah, hopefully.
That'd be nice. Well, it'd be a brand new chapter. I look forward to reading about it on your blog as well.
Thank you.
Well, one thing I do love about Somerset is some of the names. I don't know but Bruton you're in?
I'm in Bruton, yeah.
Yeah, I love, because the time I've only been there a couple of times, but wonderfully named it near Huishes Coley.
Oh, I think that's
totally mispronounced when I first went there, and Curry Rivel. And I just thought,
oh yeah, yeah.
Nowhere else in this country would you find such a wonderful name. I got Huishes Coley totally wrong. And then someone said, I was born there. I went, oh right, how do you say it? Then I was like, oh, interesting. It's all fun. Right, next question. Are you much of a seed saver or propagator, or do you prefer to buy a fresh packet every year?
So I've been doing quite a lot of seed saving. I do as much as is feasible.
Okay.
So certain things I would never save the seed of would be things like squashes and courgettes.
Okay.
Because they are very cross pollinating.
Yeah.
So I think they take quite a long time to grow, and if you are wanting a particular kind of squash for good flavour or good storage, I want to know, and they take space too. I want to know that I'm going to get what I am hoping for. So for those, I am really happy to buy the seeds and support independent seed companies that are able to grow them without, in controlled conditions, so they don't cross-pollinate. There's also a very slight risk, but horrible risk, that if they cross-pollinate, they've all got a latent gene, and it can trigger this, which makes the fruit bitter. And if it's bitter tasting, it's toxic. So I've spoken with people who've had 3 days of horrible food poisoning, and there are cases where people have died. So that's one I wouldn't seed save. But other things are really easy to save the seeds from, peas and things like that. So I save those. I've been saving a lot of the flower seeds of the things that I grow for the biodiversity and edible flowers.
Yep.
I've actually got them all piled up behind me at the moment, ready to go in envelopes. And so I do as much as I can. I mean, it's the thing with seed saving as well, it's very much about space. So for a lot of gardeners, and you might not have the space to let something keep growing right to the point of being able to harvest.
Yeah.
And so it's finding a balance, I think. So if you can save a few seeds, that's great. If you can't, then you can be happy that you're supporting a small company or wherever you choose to get them from.
Because a lot of the seed companies, I've noticed some of the smaller independent, well, even some of the medium sized ones, they seem to be being brought up by the bigger people, I've noticed as well lately.
Yeah, one company in particular. One company in particular, last week, I think it was. Yes, so there are.
But they seem to be, you think you're dealing with one company when you're not really.
And I think a lot of seed companies are buying seeds from the same source, so that you might think I'm buying from Fred Bloggs and Co., you know, their carrot seeds, and then your allotment neighbour might be buying them from Betty Smith seeds, and they could all be actually from the same seed, but you could be paying a pound more for Betty Smith's, for example. But so the small seed companies that you are open pollinated and heritage, they are, there's several here that are super, they're really good to support, you know, Real Seeds and Vital Seeds and the Seed Co-op. There's a really good seed company in Ireland called Brown Envelope Seeds, and Bingenheimer Saatgut in their biodynamic seeds and organic seeds in Germany. The problem with the German and the Irish seeds, which at the moment it's legal to import, is it could be tricky next year because of Brexit.
We've got this far without mentioning that word.
I know. Well, I'm not going to get political about it. It's just a fact about seed importing.
Yeah.
Got to be careful importing seeds from the United States and other places like that. There's special certificates that some seeds have to have, and they can be seized at customs. And be really, really careful buying anything off eBay, because unless you know it's an eBay company that is a recognisable company, people have been getting seeds sent from goodness knows where, and often they're just really old and unviable. Yeah. So it's a waste of money. And I've known people buy some via my Facebook group, and they've bought seeds. So they've expected, let's say, a butternut squash. You can picture what that looks like. And the thing that they've grown is some weird gourd-like thing. And we're having to say, look, just don't eat it because you don't know what it is. And it could be unscrupulous. It could have been fine, but it's... And seed swaps are really good. Again, you want to be careful. Anybody selling their squash seed or offering squash seed, I wouldn't touch that. But that's a really good way of sharing seeds. And another thing that you could do with, like, get together with friends and each of you choose one plant. So you could say choose that you're going to grow a particular variety of really good lettuce. And share that with your friends, and somebody else is going to supply you all with a particularly gorgeous tomato, and that way you're spreading it amongst your community.
That's very good. I mean, also the other bit of that is you will get to try it, and you may well find the person who grew it can't stand it, but the person on the next block might say, well, I like that, so they themselves. It's a part of the thing of having it. I mean, that is one good thing of being on an allotment with other allotmenteers, is you can do that. And obviously, if you're on your own in your garden, you don't necessarily have that. But it swings and roundabouts, unfortunately, in that sense, isn't it?
Totally, yeah.
So that's cool.
All My Reads gives you unlimited access to more than 100 specialist books, from history to mystery, rockets to royals, planes to trains, bikes to biographies, and much, much more. Access the digital books across multiple devices, including your desktop, tablet, and phone. All My Reads is just $4.99 per month. Visit allmyreads.com to find out more. Browse the extensive range of titles and try your first month for just 99 pence. Get ready to browse and begin.
Right. What are the greatest lengths or depths your love of growing vegetables have taken you to?
I don't know. I think because I'm so obsessed about it all. It's such an integrated part of my life.
Well, that's fair enough. Basically, there are no lengths or depths you wouldn't go to for your vegetable step. I think we can leave it at that.
I think that is pretty much. I mean, when I got my polytunnel, which was, that was really good fun. It was like half the people at the local pub came and helped me put it up. This was about 10 years ago.
Very
and
good.
One of my children said, that I preferred vegetables to them because I'd built my vegetables a polytunnel and I'd never done anything for my own children.
I'm sure they don't hold it against you, Steph.
No, they are really, but I think it was because it's some 12 by 40 feet. And I think they were thinking, oh, this is brilliant party place for us.
Get out. Yeah, they're nice to the vegetables. No, that's great. Well, there you do, though, when you've got things like that. That's what happens. And also, yeah, kids just have to learn that sometimes.
Yeah. I think they were teasing me.
I'm sure they were. I'm sure they would let you, they will let you remember. They'll tell you that every so often, though.
Yeah, totally.
Right. Now, here's a question. Steph, you're marooned on an island in the middle of nowhere. Fortunately, it's a fertile desert island, but you can take one packet of seeds, one song with you, one book. What would your choices be for your desert island veg?
Oh, goodness. Probably squash, actually, because I think hopefully on the desert island there will be greens and...
Oh, it's very fertile, this desert island.
So I think if I brought squash, then you know you've got plenty of dinners.
Cool, yeah.
And it would be taste yummy cooked in an open fire in the embers.
Oh, and lovely.
Yeah, a really nice nutty squash. That would be yum. And a song. Do you know, I don't know if I'd want to take one because then you'd have the same song over and over again and it would drive you mad.
Fair enough. You can do that.
And a book, it would just have to be a really big, thick one, wouldn't it?
Well, you can take your own as well, Steph. I'd perfectly allow that.
I don't really want to take my own, though. I think I know what I'd say.
Enough of it.
It would need to be, I'm not sure which one, but I would take a very large collection of short stories.
Okay.
Well, preferably one written by lots of different authors, so a collection, so that you've got different voices and different experiences and different styles. That would be interesting. And then by the time we got to the end, hopefully I'd have forgotten what the story at the beginning was and I could start again.
There you go. Perfect answer. Perfect answer. Right, here's another one for you. What is your favourite season of the year?
Autumn.
Lovely. That's a very popular answer, autumn. Mine as well.
I like the smell. I like the smell of it. It's a bit, and also I think when you grow vegetables, it's not a putting garden to bed time of year because there's the next lot of things coming on. You know, you're starting, and there's
transition.
And the Brussels sprouts are nearly ready, and they're one of my favourite things. I love Brussels sprouts, and winter vegetables are so yummy. And I really, really like preserving, and there's lots of that in the autumn. This year's been a bit weird, of course, because although I've got leeks and Brussels sprouts and all the rest of it in the garden and the allotment, and I've got some plants in the polytunnel, I haven't been growing as much as I normally would for over winter. I haven't planted any garlic, I haven't planted any broad beans because I'm moving. And that's been a bit strange.
Yeah.
Yes, but in a normal year, it's still quite busy. And then I love making all the compost, you know, chopping up the sweet corn stems. And I like it making little houses for all the wild things to hibernate in. And that's really nice. And walks. And I like the fact that I can light the fire in the evening. And that's cozy. And I like stew. Do you get the idea?
Yeah, but I'm going to miss it. We're moving, but I've got two log burners. It hasn't got any log burners at the moment. And I said to my wife, I'm going to miss that. We just put a little fire on every night. So these are the little things I'm going to miss. And I must admit, because I gave my allotment up because I thought someone else, it's a good time to start an allotment is in the autumn time. So I said, it's no point me keeping it on for a bit because I'm moving out of the area. I can't keep the allotment, unfortunately. And I've actually missed it this last month. Because I'd usually just pot it down. It's my escape. People say to me, but you garden all day, you're a landscaper. What do you want to do more? And I just said, yeah, but I can just go down there and I can lose myself for 2 hours. And I might not have really done very much. You have a chat with some fellow plot holders. And you just, as you say, getting on doing things, as you say, pulling up, as you say, your sweet corn and things, chopping up, messing around. I've missed putting, like you, my garlic and onions, I always put in October, November time. Of course, not this year. It's a funny time, as I say, you forget how much you miss it when it's gone, I suppose, easiest way to say it.
Well, I've still got my allotment until I move. But it's got leaves.
Yeah, no, I just felt...
So I'm not giving them up.
Yeah. I took some Brussels sprouts because my old allotment, they're actually going to turn into a bit of a nature area. So I'd kind of been, because I met before I left, I've got some, got the local beekeepers involved. So I should still pop back there. But yeah, I just thought, I mean, it was a bit, I did have some of the Brussels sprouts off it, but I think, I imagine once I kind of went, they probably just, well, I know everyone kept ringing, saying, oh, could I have that? Could I have that? So I went back for a few weeks afterwards and picked a few sprouts and got a couple of cabbages. But yeah, it was sad. It kind of the best year I've had them, to be honest. But that's sod's law, isn't it, I suppose?
Isn't that always the way? Yeah, yeah, this year I'm happy to say my Brussels sprouts are super. And yeah. I'm going, hurry up, hurry up.
Yeah, please, come on now. Before Christmas, if possible.
Yeah.
Cool. Who do you think has been your biggest influence on your horticultural career, shall we say, or in your gardening life?
Oh.
Doesn't have to be a famous person.
Gosh, well... I mean, really, I suppose, I'm trying to think, getting into gardening, it would have been things like knowing that my granddad, my great-granddad had an allotment and my granddad who grew strawberries. Mm-hmm. So if that would have been then, and Jeff Hamilton on TV, then that kind of thing sort of got me the idea that you can grow food. Because my parents didn't really do that, or they didn't do it at all. I got into it in my mid-teens, and but I mean the way I garden, for sure it would be Charles, because I use a lot of them, his methods. I've then adapted them, because he's always been a market gardener, and I've then adapted them to suit growing in a normal garden, growing on an allotment scale. I do some things a bit differently, which is ever so handy, actually, because it means that between the pair of us, we cover quite a breadth of experiences. And I really, Alice Fowler, I really like her work too. So there wouldn't be just one person, but for sure the way I garden, it would have to be Charles.
Fair enough. Is Charles going to miss you? Because you do a lot of the cooking on the courses, don't you?
I think he might miss the food, but I'm sure he'll get somebody lovely to do it.
Is he any good at cooking himself?
Yeah, he's very good. Not as good as me, obviously, but he's a better gardener.
Exactly. But mind you saying that, doing all the work and cooking might be a bit of a struggle, but there you go.
It might be a bit complicated, but no, he'll get somebody and they'll be really nice courses.
That'll be lovely stuff. Right, a couple of my funny questions now. Queen Victoria's just turned up in a time machine, Steph. And she wants you, basically, to design and do her lovely walled garden out of Osborne House. And now, because you have a time machine, you can have three people to help you who will work on Osborne House and in the vegetable garden. Who would you choose to take with you? And you can have them from any point of time. The magic of the time machine.
Oh, God, well, I'll have Alice Fowler then.
Yeah, very good.
Gosh, who else would be handy in a vegetable garden? I think I'd quite like William Blake.
He's come up before.
Not sure how good he'd be at growing vegetables, but he'd be ever so interesting to have around.
This is the bit, it's about having all the different people to try. And it doesn't just have to be a vegetable garden. Incorporate other things in it.
And then I'm also going to have Joni Mitchell, from her heyday, and she can sing us some songs.
There you go. I thought that, I was thinking that for a second. I was thinking, I don't know the gardener called Joni Mitchell. I think I've heard a thing. That's fine. No, this is it. Right. Now, because you've become so famous from doing Queen Victoria's Gardens, Steph.
Oh, great.
Basically, would it be Strictly Come Dancing on Ice, Bake Off, I think I'm going to know the answer, or SAS Who Dares Wins?
Oh, good.
Which one would you like to try?
I've only ever seen Strictly Come Dancing. I don't have a proper television, so I don't know what the other programmes are.
I should have known this, because I asked this question to Charles, And he went, I don't have a telly.
Yeah.
So he's never seen it.
I got one of those smart screens that I got in the lockdown, so I hadn't had a telly for 10 years.
There's nothing wrong with that.
It just, it blew up and I never replaced it.
It's quite refreshing.
So it'll have to be Strictly Come Dancing, because I've seen that at my sister's house, and me and my niece did some of the dances badly, so that's what I've got to do. I'm actually not very coordinated, so I don't think we'd win.
Probably best not dancing in icing, because it hurts when you... I can't.
Yeah, I'm not famous for my ice skating, it has to be said.
And the SAS Who Dares Wins is probably just...
I don't even know what that is. That sounds...
Basically, they take normal people and celebrities, and kind of you spend 2 weeks being shouted at by ex-SAS. So just imagine very cold, lots of long runs, early morning starts.
No.
Basically, yeah. All the things you want to do to join the SAS, which...
No, I don't want to do that, no.
No, I can't say. If I was a decent cook, I'd do Bake Off, but there's a discussion on Bake Off. There was on the radio the other day, what is baking and what is cooking? And no one could really quite put their foot on it.
Yeah, and baking isn't really my bliss. I like to do it a bit, but I prefer savoury food. I'm not sure I want to make cakes, really.
This is what they were saying on the Bake Off. They blend it in between the two of them sometimes. And actually, a chef wouldn't necessarily excel at Bake Off, because you say it's lots of, cakes and savouries and things like that, and pastries, which they should be good. But interesting one. That's fair enough, Strictly Come Dancing. Right. Now, you've got your lovely blog, Steph, and you do lots of social media, et cetera, et cetera. But what do you think? Which delivers your message best, do you think? Is it your writing? Is it your blogging? Is it your social media or your courses?
That's an interesting one, because I'm quite bookish. My preferred way of absorbing information is reading it. And one of the things I discovered from doing Instagram short videos, I'm going to do YouTube when I move. Yep. But at the moment, I haven't. But when I started doing the Instagram TV thing on my phone during the first lockdown, some of the feedback I got from people was how happy they were, because they preferred things visually. They preferred seeing and having things explained. And I think that... So I think it very much would depend on the individual. I mean, for myself, I think, it's what I write. It's the articles I write. It's the blogs. It's the books. But it might actually be the photographs on Instagram that is better for somebody else, and the short descriptions. And I think it's good to be aware. I mean, I used to be a teacher, so I am aware that I was an English teacher of years and years ago, of the fact that people learn in different ways. Mm. But it's good to be reminded. And I thought feedback like that I found very, very helpful.
I think that's the thing about feedback, or as I said, it comes in many different forms. As you say, some the general feedback is good, is structured. It actually, as you say, what may be your preference doesn't necessarily mean it's everyone else's preference, which I suppose is nice that you can cover all those bases. So you can incorporate everyone into it, because they say, well, not everyone has Twitter or Instagram.
Exactly.
Vast majority of people would think, oh, I'm not getting involved in that. So no, I think it's good that you cover all those bases. Right, finally, Steph, we all know you're going to move. Are there any little other plans you've got that you hope to get off the ground in the next foreseeable future, 6 months, a year?
So I'm writing my third book. My very, very patient publishers, it was supposed to be published fairly soon, but because of all the big changes and the year that we've all had, we decided to move it. So that will be sometime next year, as yet undecided. It's nearly finished, just not quite. And that's a gardening book, growing year round in normal spaces, very much based on what I've done here. For example, because I grow domestically, I grow for the kitchen table. Back in the day, I've run kitchen gardens for quite well-known people and things, so I've done it as a job too. But at home, I grow, if you compare it, say, with what Charles grows, I grow far more fruit, far more varieties of fruit, far more varieties of herbs, because this is for a family and home cooking, rather, obviously, with Charles, he's thinking market gardening as well as home cooking. So it's looking at that. There's a lot about growing different kinds of fruits and different herbs and ways of growing year round that you can make yourself. It's not all about, and now go and buy this expensive piece of equipment. So I'm right, that's the book I'm writing at the moment. Hopefully, the show garden that Charles and I designed for Hampton Court in 2020, that is going ahead for 2021. So that's what we're hoping. So yeah. That'll be lovely. That will be very exciting. And the design, so all the design's done, and we're doing it with our project manager is Chris Smith from Pennard Plants, which is great. And so I will be there for the setting up. I'll be doing that with Chris and his team. And then for the actual show, Charles and I will be there giving talks and all the rest of it. So hopefully that will happen.
That'd be very nice, because I could come and visit you there.
Our allotment. So that's exciting. We're currently discussing a project with Malvern, RHS Malvern, which looks, again, very interesting and fun. So one of the differences, because of the work I do, not having a market garden, I'm more flexible in a way. So I can like take a week out and go somewhere and do things for the work, our business, so what we do together. So that's kind of how we're splitting things. So that's exciting. And then, you know, Charles is speaking there, I'll speak there, and that will be lovely. I'm trying to think what else.
It's surprising when you say that, how much, as you say, you've missed out on this year when you suddenly start
totally, yeah.
Thinking, God.
Yeah, and I'm planning another book for later on. And I want to do a lot more on the food. The food writing's taken a bit of a back step. I've just started a new feature for 2021 for Kitchen Garden magazine, so I'm really excited about that. So every month, that project, and I think that's quite a lot, really. Well, and setting up a garden.
I was going to say, with your allotment, your garden, and the work you do at Homemakers and the other places you do, there's not much time left for you, Anna.
I do sleep well.
Well, good.
I go to bed about 9 o'clock and out like a light.
I bet you do. Yeah, I bet you do. Well, yes, this is good. Well, thanks for coming along for this. As I say, it's going to appear on some form of Kitchen Garden. So, and I'll do it on the transcript and put it on my website as well.
As in
the written work, because as you say, some people listen to podcasts and some people like reading a thing. But thank you very much for doing it for me. And as I say, hopefully we'll all be next year, well, these shows can go back on. And I look forward to seeing you at Hampton Court, as I say, because that's not very far from where I live, really. About half an hour, I would say.
Yeah, well, I've got my fingers crossed, hopefully.
I think the RHS seem to be pretty sure that they're going to get the shows going again. But no one knows. But as you say, you've just got to plan that you can, but know that maybe you can't. But I think that's all we can do in this current
time. You've got to have some things to look forward to, really. But now it's with a bit of if it happens.
Yes, it is, unfortunately. I think I'm hopeful that it will. But as you say, we just
need to. Yeah, let's be hopeful.
Yeah, but and I look forward to seeing your thing in the kitchen garden as well. So your new articles, as they say.
Thank you.
But thank you very much for joining me. And well done for getting nominated last night. But maybe next year your new book will be there. Fingers crossed.
Who knows?
But thank you very much for joining me, Steph. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you can subscribe to Kitchen Garden Prime for just $4.99 per month. You'll be getting a whole lot for your plot, including an easy-read tablet and phone edition to read anywhere, anytime, exclusive access to 10 years of digital back issue archives, access to exclusive content from the online allotment, the Mudketeers website, plus the monthly print magazine will be delivered free to your door each month. Head to classicmagazines.co.uk/KGPrime to sign up today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.